Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Rashid Maxwell. As you will learn in this podcast, Rashid comes from a very privileged background, but decided to break those ties to pursue his aspirations and become an artist. Today Rashid is an all-around artist, a painter, a poet, a writer, author of 2 books and 3 volumes of poetry, and also a beekeeper. Rashid, welcome to the show. How are you?
Okay, thank you. I feel very welcome. Here we go.
I'd like to start this interview talking about your background. I know you are related to Neville Chamberlain, who served as Prime Minister of the United Kingdom from May 1937 to May 1940. Chamberlain is best known for signing the Munich Agreement with Hitler. So talk us through your background, your family history, just to give listeners a sense of your journey from this kind of family context to becoming a disciple of Osho and now living a simple and peaceful life as an artist and a beekeeper.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. I was actually born before the war in 1937, 2 years before the war. And my earliest memories are of listening to aeroplanes and discovering whether they were friendly or enemy aeroplanes and learning to recognize the different sounds they made. This was in the country because many, many children were evacuated from London during the war. So skip to going to be sent to a boarding school at the age of 7. I mean, it's a fairly horrendous thing to think of now, in my view. But that was the normal for those. We were being groomed to be rulers of the empire back then in the 40s and 50s. Of course, the empire collapsed around our ears as we were growing up. But I suppose that sense of privilege gave me the insight that to have the power and the wealth didn't actually make for happiness.
On many occasions, I heard Osho saying that he was the guru of the rich people. What I understand he means is that only people who have accumulated material wealth can really appreciate spirituality. You lived this on your own skin, considering your family context and background. So what's your experience with that, looking at yourself and looking at the people around you?
Well, funnily enough, I think, like actually many children, I seriously doubted if I was the child of my parents because I actually felt so removed from their interests and their concerns, which were mainly commercial, material and political. And all the conversations at the dinner table or when guests arrived were always politics and the accruing of wealth. And for me, maybe because I was so privileged, that was never an issue. My issue as a child was, how can I be happy? And these people clearly weren't happy. They were wealthy, they were well-educated, but they weren't happy. And so I think my search very early on was for a happiness that was consistent with my own self, whoever I thought I was. That I wanted to be happy.
I'd like to mention a little curious fact here that perhaps not many listeners know. A sannyasin called Vimalkirti was Osho's personal bodyguard, and it turns out that Vimalkirti was a royal person. He was a prince of the House of Hanover. He was the nephew of Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, who is the husband of Queen Elizabeth. Hence, Vimalkirti was the first cousin of Prince Charles. And it seems that Prince Charles was very interested in meditation and wanted to visit his cousin Vimalkirti in Pune and meet Osho, but he was prohibited by Queen Elizabeth to do so. Did you know Vimalkirti?
Yes, indeed. When he wasn't guarding, he'd have times or they'd have rotas. He came and worked with me in the garden. And I was the boss at that time of growing vegetables. He was a lovely man to work with. Absolutely no ego involved in this is menial work for me. He was just a very spontaneous, easy guy to work with. Lovely. I miss him.
Did you know at the time that he was a royal person?
Yes, but we lived in a context where those sort of things had no appeal or no interest, no weight. There was no sort of status involved. It was a sort of horizontal society, not hierarchical.
And that's probably what attracted you and him to live there. So tell us how you have come across Osho and what happened then.
Okay, I actually had a farm. I bought a small holding in the Welsh mountains because I was at one stage around the age of 32, 33, absolutely frustrated and upset with the art world and the world of galleries, the world of art schools, where I was mostly involved. I wanted out of that world, the politics of it, the corridors of power were very, very difficult to negotiate and not my scene at all. So I just thought, well, if I have my own farm, I can grow my own food, because I love farming, I love gardening, I love animals. So then I will have more time for my painting. And that's when I started looking now, because suddenly I'm in a position where everything I've ever wanted, I've got. A beautiful wife, beautiful kids, a beautiful place to live, work that I love, and yet there's something missing. And then out of the blue came this book called The Way of the White Cloud. I was milking in the cow parlor in the early morning, and my wife came in with this book, and she started reading. One paragraph was all it needed. We were both in tears. We went into the house, an old friend was staying, burning toast for breakfast for the kids, and he started crying too. And we thought, this is what we've been looking for. Within 3 months, a whole concatenation of circumstances meant that we'd got the money, we'd got the time, we got someone to look after the farm, and we were in Pune in December, actually it was 1977. And I just remember going through the gates, the gateless gate, into the ashram, and my jaw dropping to the ground, because there was so much beauty. I had never seen such beauty in the people walking the green walkways, all wearing different colours of orange and red, all long-haired, the men with beards, the women. Absolutely. The way people walked, so relaxed, so easy, the way they were carrying bulks of wood or pushing a wheelbarrow or carrying a baby or a clipboard, they all moved so beautifully. They sat and talked so beautifully. They hugged. Just walking through in the first 30 seconds of my time in Pune, I knew this was my home. This is where I'd been longing to be.
As you talk about it, I can feel the vibe, I can picture those images, and it's wonderful. And basically what happened is that since you arrived in 1977, you never left till the very end. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. I mean, I just went back for 3 months to 2 months to sell the farm, to actually sell my beloved sheepdog and get rid of the beautiful pottery china set we had of tea things. But yes, I could let it all go because this was something more important than anything. More important. It was life. It was life and death. It was that big. And then very quickly I got the job from my farming background to growing vegetables for Osho. And the thing was that we didn't know anything about meditation. And yet Osho every day was saying, this is my teaching, meditation, meditation, meditation. Actually, he wasn't a teacher, but we learned from him. This is my understanding, meditation, meditation. And yet, in a way, I didn't really know about meditation. I mean, I sat there every morning for an hour and a half in discourse, but I was listening to the words. It was only years later, maybe towards the end of his life in Pune 2 in the late 80s, that finally I could listen to the silence between the words. I could be in that space of silence and emptiness in which everything is born, from which everything derives. I've given you a clue now to get on to creativity.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. I just wanted to highlight that I share Osho meditation, and I see so many people nowadays doing 2 weeks or 3 weeks or a few sessions of meditation and thinking that, you know, they've achieved somewhere. And then listening to someone like you who has been with a spiritual master like Osho for many years and being so honest in saying that it took you a long time to appreciate those silence gaps. So I think that's valuable. It's important to remind people that, yes, meditation can make you sleep better, can make you focus better, but there is dimensions beyond the mind and beyond we normally can understand and know, that that's the real treasure of meditation. That's what Osho has to offer.
Yes, good.
Time to shift gear and talk about creativity. Can you tell us where you find so much energy, inspiration and drive for all this creativity, which seems to be so abundant in you?
It is finding that silent space within. We all have it, but actually we're all so cluttered up with the cultural inheritance of mental chatter, particularly in the West. I'll tell you something really interesting, that in the commune, I never painted. Okay, I did drawings a lot of the time and occasional watercolors, but I was never in the art group or the art world of, I was much more involved with construction, carpentry, with gardening, farming, environment, ecology. I was much more involved, even in the days of the ranch with Sheila, working in the pot room and doing menial jobs. So I never got to experience creativity in the commune as, you know, as an artist. But as soon as I left the commune, when Osho left the body, it all came back, but reinvigorated, renewed. Now, this was the thing about the problems I was having before sannyas, that only very occasionally would my mind take a back seat and the painting paint itself. Like all artists talk about it, the poem writing itself, the novel writing itself. But now I understand that why Osho never gave me the work of creativity was because I needed to find that empty space first. From then on, there is a potential for creativity.
It seems like you're saying, through meditation, I learned silence. I learned to empty the cup, and then out of that emptiness, all the content of my art is overflowing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Beautifully put. Yeah. And meditation is the fast track to all sorts of creativity and freshness. And I think that must be the answer to your previous question, why I still at the age of 80 feel as much energy as I had when I was 18.
Wonderful. And that's the miracle of meditation, I think.
Oh, I'll tell you another thing that's really lovely, is that somehow as I get older, my mind gets less intrusive and I feel closer to kids. Because kids don't have intrusive minds. I mean, up to the age of 7, they're pure blank sheet of paper. And then gradually they get more. But even up to the age of 17, 18, kids have still got 1 foot in emptiness, 1 foot in the beyond. And I find it so beautiful hanging out with kids. And actually, I've got quite a lot of grandchildren, as you know. They're a terrific inspiration to me. And I think it's mutual. We inspire each other.
So it seems like you're saying in my 80s, I'm becoming a child again.
Something like that. Yes.
Because your mind is getting kind of more empty and you connect more with children. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Which form of art you feel represents you the most? Where do you feel you can express yourself at your best?
I think it's got to be painting, because it's a long way from words. It's to do with gesture, it's to do with colour, it's to do with shape, form, line, a brightness, darkness, hue. It's all those things. And it's, they're a long way from words.
I want to talk about your book on Lakshmi. The book is called The Holy Life, published by Simon & Schuster, and tells the story of Lakshmi, Osho's first disciple and Osho's first personal secretary, which effectively means that Lakshmi was Osho's right hand for many years. How the book came about and why to write a book on Lakshmi today?
Okay, I was invited by Swami Atul in Osho World up in Delhi to write the book. And I saw writing about Lakshmi as a way of bringing, using Lakshmi as a finger pointing to Osho, and Osho is pointing back then to what we need to know now, what we need to know about ourselves and about the world. Osho is pointing back then to what we need to do now. To change the world, we must change ourselves. And changing ourselves is what Lakshmi was about. She, Lakshmi, went through the process from start to finish, the process of transformation. She can be, I don't want to say role model, what's the word? She's an example, a beautiful example of how someone can go through the dark valleys of despair, of difficulties, of rejection, of sadness, and still attain to the sunlit peaks to which we all aspire. That's my reason for writing.
What was the most interesting fact you have learned in your research?
It is extraordinary to me that someone who was so close to Osho, who was so beautifully efficient and effective as his secretary, could, within 10 years, be ejected from his commune. So the story is how and why that happened and the processes she had to go through in order to realize her true nature. There's one little thing, story, that in the context of the Wild Wild Country, which is sweeping across the world at the moment, sex guru thrown out of America, Lakshmi was his first secretary and most intimate disciple for a period of 10 years at least. And as far as I know, she was a virgin. So sex guru or not, his secretary, she had never had sex in her life as far as I ascertained.
You normally hear quite the opposite about people around Osho, so it's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I want to talk about Osho today. In your view, how Osho has contributed to the development of human consciousness?
Okay, first let me just say that my understanding is that humanity has evolved at the moment as far as it's going to go physically. We've gone beyond survival of the fittest. We have survived and out-survived every other living. I mean, maybe the environment is going to kill us in the end, but what I understand is that now our evolution has to be in consciousness. That's where the future lies, because with the consciousness we have at the moment, look at the mess we've made. Look at the mess. This planet, how long will it survive? What future is there for our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren? It's going to be a very difficult one. And that's not even before we talk about IT technology is already beyond our control. We already have a technology. So we have to evolve a consciousness to get back an equilibrium in this on this planet. Osho was talking about that 40 years ago, actually 50 years ago even. And he was laying out a whole toolkit we can use to evolve our consciousness. Osho, from his earliest years, read hugely. He read, even when I was in Pune, he was reading 10 books a week. Or was it 10 books a day? No, 10 books a week, I think. Well, he read a lot, and he would remember, and he could be questioned about anything that he'd read and would remember. He had got total recall. That's how empty he was. He was equipping himself, reading all this stuff, including all sorts of crappy magazines and newspapers, in order to understand what it was that was motivating the human race, East and West. So he gave himself the insights and the understandings of how best to give us tools for our evolution. All those discourses and all those meditations are the fruit that we can nourish ourselves on if we are to leave a future for future generations.
And that's how many young people feel, because otherwise you wouldn't explain how a man who is no more here talking is attracting so many people, perhaps even more nowadays than when he was in the body. His books are sold as bestsellers in many countries. YouTube videos are downloaded in incredibly high numbers. So definitely Osho is alive. His message is a message which is valid today.
So, can I add one little fact here? I understand that since that film docuseries The Wild Country came out, hits on Osho's websites and the sale of books has gone up from 300 to 500%. That says something, even though in that film it's, as it were, totally negative to what was happening in Osho's commune. Even so, a few little glimpses of Osho in that film, a couple of minutes in 6 hours, yet people have picked up on the fragrance, on the beauty, on the incredible courage of what he was doing at that time.
So we are heading towards the end. Tell us a bit about your current projects, if you have any, and where people can find you, get in touch with you, if they want to connect with you, ask questions.
Yes. Well, just go to www.rashidmaxwell.com, and there is a section there, Contact Me. And I'd be happy to enter into constructive dialogue with anyone. My future project, I haven't clearly got a project, but what's coming together in my heart is my love of words and my love of images, the painter and the poet. And I think it might be a film combining words and images. I want to create works that induce meditation, that actually that put arms around the listener or the viewer so that they feel they can relax into meditation. I want to create meditation visually. And I think that's what much Oriental art does. And some of the early, for example, the cathedrals of Europe, I think they do that. They create a state of meditation just by their grandeur and their intricacy and their rhythmic splendor.
Well, we look forward to seeing your
cathedral.
Okay, so last 3 questions for you. The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours?
Well, the first thing is 4 o'clock in the morning meditation. I do that in order to synchronize with the rising sun or the beginning of the day, the birds waking up, 4 to 5 or 4:30 to 5:30, around that time I sit. Then afterwards I lie in bed. Very often I listen to music, and it could be Beethoven late quartets, but it's more likely to be Drupad singers, those sacred singers from India, old India.
Second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Sitting silently. That's where I'm at now. For many years, you know, I love to do dynamic. I love to do Kundalini every day, you know, whenever that was possible. So those are two beautiful meditations that Osho evolved for us, the modern mental man, the modern unbalanced, the modern stressed out man. But I did enough of that and sat with him enough to now give me the space to be able to sit silently, which I do morning and evening, last thing at night, first thing in the morning. And actually, I want to say something for the meditation called the Mystic Rose. It's that one which you laugh for a week, you cry for a week, and you sit silently for a week, 3 hours every day. That changed my life. That was amazing. That is a real life changer.
Last question. You leave the Osho experiment. What does it mean to be with Osho 2018?
Yes, big question. I mean, he means everything. He is my life. He's in everything I do and think and feel and want and love. He's there. And what is imminent in my life is the coming together of those two worlds. Zorba, the man of the world, Buddha, the man of the inner, the metaphysical and the physical.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. You shared so many beautiful things, and I'm sure our listener take away lots of value.
I want to say you've asked some beautiful questions. You've actually managed to penetrate to the depths with the questions. That's very good.
Thank you for that.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveoshow.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.